The Peer Advantage, episode 5014. Today, we're going to put a bow on it, chapter by chapter audio summary of the book, The Power of Peers. Today, it's an interview with co-author Leo Battari. Hey, welcome inside the Yellow Studio. My name is Randy Kentrell, your host here at The Peer Advantage. You can find show notes and other useful resources over at the website, growgreat.com. This episode is brought to you by The Peer Advantage by Bula Network. The Peer Advantage is, well, it's peer advantage groups for small to medium business owners, a virtual group. I'm currently forming two charter groups of seven each. These are virtual online groups that will meet a couple of times a month to provide the peer advantage for at least, for now, up to 14 of you. So if you have interest in that, please go to the website, thepeeradvantage.com. So today, as we said, we're going to wrap up this series by a conversation that Leo and I recorded earlier today. The interview was recorded using a video conferencing platform, and the video is going to be available at YouTube, and it will also be posted at my website, growgreat.com. Just search for episode 5014, and you will see the video of that interview. Now, the video is the interview only. And in the conversation, we talked to Leo to get a sense of who he is and how he came to be interested in Peer Advantage. And we also discussed some highlights that he gained over the last 18 months or so since the book was published. And he tells us a little bit about a new book that he's working on, due to be published in the spring of 2018. It's a conversation that I hope brings you some insights on why you may want to consider embracing the peer advantage into your life and in your business. I'm going to insert the conversation here and let it roll, and we'll have some closing thoughts at the end. Enjoy. Leo Battari is with us, as I had promised in previous episodes. And Leo, the audience has heard me talk probably ad nauseum about you, and
probably quite enough.
And no, there's never enough. And how we kind of came to form a relationship. But I would like you to give the audience, especially in the context of this book summary, some sense of who you are and how you came to be interested in Peer Advantage to begin with.
Yeah, well, my real career has really been in corporate communications, both on the agency side and on the client sides of the business. So on the agency side of the business, I owned my own firm for a while between 95 and 2000. And while I was there, I was part of what was called the WorldCom Public Relations Group. And I joined that group largely because it's essentially a consortium of over 100 best in practice PR agencies around the world. And it gave me offices in different cities, and I had partners and I had people to work with. So if there were situation where a client had a need that was outside of my local area, I had a trusted partner to work with. The real benefit, though, in addition to that, was how much I learned from the other agency principals who were my peers. We would get together twice a year, and then, of course, we would keep in contact throughout the year as well. I just learned so much and got so much out of it. You know, later, when I started teaching graduate school, I became very evident very quickly when you've got mid to senior level executives who are graduate students that they have a whole lot to bring to the table. So any model of me thinking that I'm just going to lecture at these people and to teach them things, you know, versus facilitate a group so that they all can share their experiences and we can work together on the material and the content and learn from one another, that was extremely powerful. And I think the third leg of the stool when I think about why I became so attracted to peer groups was, of course, my work at Vistage. I started there in corporate communications. And when I started the job there, Rafael Pastor was the CEO. And I mentioned to Rafael at the time that I didn't want to be running corporate communications out of San Diego and that's it. That's no I didn't have a very good window into the business if that was going to be the situation. You know, years earlier when I worked on the client side for the Stop and Shop companies, I wrote speeches for the CEO, and I actually spent more time in stores, you know, with customers and employees on the front lines than probably anybody at corporate headquarters. And it was incredibly valuable. So I try to bring that to every position that I've ever taken since. So at Vistage, with the generous participation of chairs who were willing to have me come into their meetings and really see what it was all about, you know, in all different parts of the country with all different styles and all different, you know, kinds of groups, whether they were CEOs of larger companies, smaller companies, key executive groups, I really got a feel for the power of those groups and the magic really that is created in that kind of environment and how CEOs and key executives benefit. So I think with that, my role at Vistage evolved from corporate communications to thought leadership to directing a specific thought leadership initiative around not only this idea that we know the groups work, we just, I don't think we're always good about articulating how they work and why they work. So that ultimately led to working with Leon Shapiro and I think both of us kind of convincing the board of directors that wouldn't it be great, instead of creating a hardcover brochure for Vistage, that we in fact looked at these peer groups for business leaders and educators all over the world, not just look at Vistage groups, but look at YPO, look at EO, look at private groups, look at True North groups, as Bill George described in his book. And with that is what the power of peers, you know, eventually kind of chronicles, you know, a look at all of those peer groups and a look at how and why they work. So that's kind of, you know, brief, I guess, or a short way of saying that covering 35 years or so of kind of going through all this, but it's been an amazing journey. And this particular year, as you know, dubbed it the year of the peer, you know, with your help, of course, and leadership, really, we have this podcast series, we have so many things going on, but this has been a year of real learning for me. And I think the idea of the book wasn't that this was the, you know, the definitive book on peer groups by any stretch of the imagination. The idea was that we were going to begin a conversation. And, you know, you have other people out there, you know, writing about, you know, the power of this. I hope there's more, you know, of them that start to do it. But as you know, I'm working on my next book for spring of 2018, which is really going to cover a lot of what I learned from the year of the peer, these timeless takeaways that these various scholars and CEOs and authors have really provided me, and just try to put it all together in a way that can be useful for people and they can bring it into their own lives.
What are some of the significant things that you have learned since writing and publishing The Power of Peers from then till now? I mean, are there been any big surprises?
I don't know surprises, but definitely real insights. Definitely, I think we knew that the tie between the five factors and high-performing groups and high-performing teams was there. I think over this past year, now I see how strong it is. So in other words, I've done now 25 workshops for CEOs and key executives this year alone. And there are 3-hour workshops that are essentially a self-assessment of their peer group against the five factors. With that, though, as these CEOs are participating in this, what they also get is, and I leave it for them at the end so that they can do it themselves or have someone do it in their organization, they can run the same kind of assessment with their teams using the five factors. And what happens is that it inspires these incredible conversations, you know, that people have around the five factors, you know, which are, you know, as you know, really centered around having the right people in the room, having a safe and trusting environment, having valuable interaction, and so that people are productive, making sure that people are accountable to one another, not just the leader, and, you know, that they're connected to the mission and they are committed to one another. You know, and finally, that you have leadership that understands these factors and serves as the steward of those factors and make sure that the kind of environment helps everybody grow and helps everybody be better. So, again, We see it as evident in high-performing groups. I think the tie is even stronger to high-performing teams than I even might have, asserted, 18 months ago. I think there have been some other things too. One in particular, around this idea of a safe environment. You know very well, we've had a lot of guests talk about the value and importance of being in a place where you can really freely share. And we don't often have those spaces where we're able to do that. What's really fascinating is for many groups that I've visited, they will rank the safety of their environment very high, 9, 9.5, some even 10 out of 10 when you ask them to rank it. And the issue, unfortunately, is that they'll also say, when I ask, how would you rank your use of this environment? And then they're down to about a 6 because they know the environment's safe. They just can't bring themselves sometimes to dive in. And what happens is that some people will and some people won't. And then eventually you sometimes have some issues with people who believe, hey, I'm really putting myself out there and sharing all the time, and I feel like you're holding back, so we need you in this. We need you to be a full participant. And so we get a lot of conversations going around that, but I think it's one thing to have a safe environment. It's quite another to get people to take advantage of it. And I think that has been a really big aha this year in terms of trying to help folks do that more effectively.
In my limited experience, which is just, a few years old in this space and trying to kind of participate and contribute in this space, I'm finding that part of that reluctance, at least on the front end, and this is strictly anecdotal on my part, there's nothing statistically valid about any of this, but it seems to me that people have this misconception going in that it's a bunch of people telling you what to do as opposed to people sharing experiences. And I'm wondering, the people that are in those environments, in those safe environments where they rank it very high as far as a safe and secure place, I'm wondering, even after they've experienced it over some period of time, do you think that there's something still locked in their head thinking that that's what it is, that there's going to be this judgment and people trying to tell you what to do? Or
I think it lingers, sure. I think that it takes a while, to break that cycle. As we had Scott Mordell from YPO on the show, and he talked a lot about safe environment and the kinds of things that compromise the safety and kind of sanctity of that environment. And I think it's something that, I think the other thing that has come up is that you can have a safe environment, but people also realize that you have to really pay attention to it. You have to water that plant every day. You can't forget about it. You can't pretend, our environment's safe. That's good. We can go focus on other things now. This is something that you really have to, I think pay attention to so that people, do feel open. I do think too, to your point about sharing experiences versus advice, most of the time, I think members get advice when they ask for advice. Or when they need help doing what it is they want to do, not because someone's telling them you should do this. I think Scott Bade made a great point about you shouldn't should people, right? Yeah. I think sharing experiences, offering suggestions when you have permission to do so, can be really, really helpful because people are looking sometimes, we talk in the book some, but sometimes people aren't always looking for answers to their questions as opposed to looking for, to make sure that they're asking the right questions to begin with. And so I think just having a group of people to kind of kick this stuff around in a way, one of the things when you talk about learnings, not only about safety environment, but this idea of valuable interaction. And there are some groups, for example, where people will say, you can't have valuable interaction if you don't have anything to interact about. And the members have responsibility for that, right? They need to bring whatever issue or challenge or opportunity may be ahead. And every once in a while you'll have groups who say, I don't really have anything to talk about this month. And I don't want to feel like I'm forced to have to come up with something that isn't
right.
particularly meaningful to me right now or whatever. And so one of the things that, you know, I've at least recommended, you know, to some of the groups with their permission, of course, is that they think in terms of keeping a list of what if questions, right? What if my number two person left tomorrow with no warning? You know, what if a new competitor entered my space that I didn't expect? What if, you know, all of these kinds of things. And what's interesting about those questions is A, they can happen. And I mentioned that they should think about those questions kind of like we do in crisis management, right? We think about them as what are the big show-stopping issues, right? What are the things that could be most problematic? And what's the likelihood they could occur? And you put those in a rank order and you deal with them, you know, one at a time. And in most cases, when you put a question like that to the group, it's not only going to be helpful for you to get feedback that is going to help you think about that entire question much more holistically than you're likely to be able to do yourself, but it's now going to be relevant to every other person in the room, because every other person in the room has a number two that could either leave or get hit by a bus or who the heck knows.
Oh, yeah.
You know,
and that's a never ending list too.
Yeah. And being, and I think being prepared for that, you know, part of, you know, what we talked about in the book, as you know, in the 2008 financial crisis, it wasn't that group members survived the crisis because they were that much better run companies. They were better prepared. So when groups can help each other prepare for the unexpected, that can be extremely valuable. And I think when it comes to valuable interaction, you may not have something that you're dealing with right this minute, but go to your list of what if questions and pull one of those out and you'll get some pretty inspired conversation around the table, believe me.
I'm wondering what impact in today's world and with social media and the pervasiveness of the internet, obviously, and so much guruism and holding forth. I'm wondering what your thoughts are on people's openness to, I mean, you hear bloggers and podcasters and all kinds of people talk about interaction, and the interaction really tends to only be two ways in the sense of they hold forth and the interaction they get is adoration.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, does that permeate any mindset? I'm wondering, you know, and we're dealing with business owners, at least the context for you and me is CEOs, business owners, leaders, educators. And these are intelligent people, not that other people aren't, but these are accomplished people. These are not people who have lived their life siloing themselves by and large.
Sure. No, and I think we found that. I mean, look at the guests on the podcast. I mean, every one of them, you know, no one that we've ever had in the program, and I would guess we ever will have in the program, is saying, I am where I am today because I did it all by myself. I mean, it just doesn't happen. And they, you know, they surround themselves with good people. To your point about content, though, I think one of the things that becomes difficult for people when they're trying to put their arms around being part of a group, as opposed to reading some article that gives me the three ways to do this, the five ways to do that, right, and 10 ways that I can achieve greatness, right? I mean, I think for the most part, almost every one of these articles should come with a warning label. I mean, really, because it is like, you know, all of these kind of, we live in this tips society. We get this tip and we think that we're going to integrate that. And what we know is that it's mostly about a change in mindset, right? When you, as you know, we just recorded VaynerMedia, you know, Claude Silver from VaynerMedia. When you look at what they do, how hard would that be to replicate, right?
Yeah.
On paper, not at all. In reality, super hard because that has to become who you are. It can't become, you know, VaynerMedia could give you all the tips in the whole world about how to be just like them. You couldn't pull it off in a million years.
No.
And so I think in part, when you get around a group of people and it really comes to a deeper dive, you know, I think one of our guests one time, I think it may have been Sekou Andrews, said, you know, to go higher, you got to go deeper.
Yeah.
And I think sometimes we're afraid to go deeper. Sometimes we are, you know, reluctant or less likely to you know, try to engage in something that, because give me the three, five or 10 tips and I'm good.
Yeah, right.
I mean, that's just kind of, you know, human nature in many respects. And this is more challenging, but it's also far more rewarding, far more, you know, far more likely to help someone really achieve the goals that they want to, whether it's personally or professionally. There's just no question about it, you know? So I wish, you know, like I said, I wish the tips articles just had to all come with a, you know, something.
Yeah.
Well, it's something, you know, but
it's good click. It's good clickbait. It gets people to click and, and, you know, and we're headline readers by and large, you know, and yet it's interesting to me just on the content side, you see increasingly you're seeing some long form content have its way. I mean, even Gary at VaynerMedia has done some really long form Facebook posts, and you know, and he can do some rather lengthy video stuff. So I don't know, interesting to watch. In the book, you do address the fact that it's a small percentage of CEOs that take advantage of peer advisory. And you go through some of the reasons why that is. Any new revelations, new insights in that regard, and how that bridge can be gapped so that other people can actually see how valuable this is?
You know, what's interesting is just look at kind of the arc of what's happening in society right now. On one hand, we don't trust institutions, but yet we don't want to talk and listen to one another either. You know, we've got bifurcated media. We've got, you know, the ability just to hang around with people just like us who just reinforce our view of the world and really never challenge us in any big way. So I think to decide that, oh, I'm going to go into a CEO group where I'm likely to meet up with people who disagree with me on a lot of things. And it should be a big so what. I mean, you and I have talked about this before. I think one of the things that we do, and this is to little kids, this is our parents. Almost everybody I know, parents have told them, hey, by the way, you get into conversations with folks, talk about anything but religion and politics, right? Isn't that a pretty common piece of advice?
Yeah, pretty universal.
I think about that as the stupidest advice that any parent could ever give a kid. You know, and I think in largely it's because it's all based on this assumption that, you know, we have to get into a debate that someone's going to, you know, change your faith or your politics or anything. Instead of imagining that, why wouldn't you absolutely want to talk about those things? Why wouldn't you want to learn about someone's faith? Why wouldn't you want to learn about their politics and how and why they see the world they do the way they do? And, you know, and if we just kind of listen for understanding, not listen because I want to prove I'm right or because of, you know, anything other than that, just to really listen and understand and kind of expose ourselves to a lot of different ideas and things. And I think if we did more of that from the time we were kids and, you know, we were in school, you know, I think it's getting better. I think teachers are doing a lot more with regard to a much more collaborative environment in schools than when I went. You know, you and I have talked about this many times. You know, collaboration was cheating, you know, when you were, you know, it's, so I think that's helpful. I'm hoping, you know, when we talked to Claude Silver the other day, it was, you've got a company that she herself describes as about 80% millennials and yet highly collaborative environment. People who want to work together. They want to make one another champions. And I'm not sure that I would describe my work environment back in the day in that way at all. So maybe we're heading in the right direction, which is really good. Maybe these future leaders will be far more likely to participate in peer groups, not only within their industry, but in connecting with people outside their industry so they can get a real sense of, you know, what other people are doing. And some of it's going to be for them and some not, but what's the harm in being exposed to a lot of really great ideas and being able to select what feels right, you know, for you and for your organization?
I'm interested, and I would like, and I know that we've got enough people in the audience that would like to hear just a little bit more about the workshops and the work that you do, and kind of give us some sense of what those topics look like and a bit more about that workshop.
Yeah. So there's two things that I've really kind of done this year. Three, I guess. One of them, you know, at times I'll do keynotes where we try to just really go through the power of peers and talk about how and why these groups work. Try to do it in a way that isn't just rehashing the book. I kind of hate that when, you know, if I've read the book and an author gets up and all they do is talk about the book, then I don't need a live reading of the content I've already known about. But if I try to provide a lot of additional information and a lot of, you know, things that, you know, I think can be helpful there. The workshops I've done in two ways. One, for CEO groups, as I've mentioned. So you've got a peer group of CEOs, diverse group of CEOs. They come together every month and they've been working together a while. I've worked with some groups that have been as long as 18 years and some that are just starting. So the assessment becomes one of more of aspiration. What group do we want to become? You know, what does the start look like? So it's a really fun way to get that process started. For others, because they've been together so long and they know each other so well, you know, there's everybody can always get better. I don't care how long you've been together, how well you know one another, how rich everyone's gotten, all that. I mean, everybody can, you know, take their game up a notch. And I think, again, the idea is to look at, you know, each of the five factors. They basically rank, they define what that factor means to them and their group, which is kind of, you know, interesting as well. They rank on a scale of 1 to 10 where they believe they are. And then let's say that they rank, you know, valuable interaction at a 7.5. So now they're asked, well, what would it take to get to a 10? What would that look like? And they identify what would it take to bridge the gaps. And then in the actual third part of the workshop, we develop an action plan for addressing those gaps and what we do. And again, throughout, the CEOs are constantly reminded that this same exercise, all of the stuff we're doing right here, can be done also with their high-performing teams in the organization. I've had some CEOs call me 2 days later because they did the workshop. They put their own team the next day, they put them through it. And then I'll get the call the day after saying, we had conversations that never would have happened in a million years if we didn't just create the forum that allowed people to do that. And we learned so much about ourselves as a team. And I think the big takeaway from anyone who I've ever heard has done this is team members realize, I'm actually the one who's responsible for my happiness, my productivity, my growth, you know, all these kinds of things. And it isn't all about looking to the leader for you make me happy, you do this for me, you do that for me. And it's actually really empowering, you know, for that group. And it brings the group and the team actually in either case, much closer together, and it works really well.
Well, and you and I have talked about these internal, you know, these internal siloings that happen, and the bigger a company gets, the more obvious they seem to become, you know, where the sales staff can think, well, the credit department, they're just a bunch of people that say no to everything that I bring them, and putting those people from different groups in a group together. So at least they've got some sense of what pressures they're each under. You know, that internal opportunity seems to me to be enormous for this kind of thing.
It's funny because you can go into organizations and not only could you bring a group of people together, let's say you had director level, right? So you've got marketing, HR, finance, whatever you want to put around the table. And typically if you say to the director of finance, hey, what do you think the director of marketing does all day? They have no clue. He has no idea at all. And this will go for a lot of the people around there. Now, On one hand, you've got this cross-functional team that's supposed to be depending on one another, yet they really don't know what they do very well. On a deeper level than that, they don't really know one another as human beings often, you know, very well. Mm-hmm. They don't know, hey, you have a dog, I have a dog too. You like this kind of music or that, or you're married or you're not, or you have kids, or, you know, all kinds of things that once people get to know, and this is not anything that, you know, hundreds of other people haven't written about, right? If we get to know one another as people, we're probably going to be more understanding of one another, be more collaborative and do those kinds of things. And yet we don't do it, you know, and don't do it nearly well enough or often enough. So, you know, if we all kind of just kind of pile on, I guess, in some respects, and kind of reiterate the value and importance of that message, and that it's not all about the task. You know, we can be so focused on the task that we don't focus on the things that are responsible for completing the task. And in most cases, that's, you know, the people in the organization that you really have to depend on to, you know, work together.
Well, and the great thing today, I was telling my wife last night, you know, we were driving in the car back from someplace, and I said, you know, I mean, we are living in a day and age where connection, you know, we were talking about doing this recording today. Yeah. And I said, you know, you don't have to go back all that many years ago. And I said, for a guy in Dallas, Texas, and a guy in San Diego, now in Crested Butte, you know, to even connect is a pretty spectacular thing. I mean, I'm thinking that we've got technology in our favor. We've got so many things going in our favor to really make these interactions happen, and for us to really do some very serious collaboration and open our minds to the possibilities. You know, I'm too old. I wish I would have been born 40 years, you know, 40 years later, but it's awesome. It's really awesome to be in this time at this space. And I constantly am telling young people that who see their world, some who are disillusioned and already too cynical and don't see the possibility that I think guys like us do see, because we're taking advantage of it. My lands, if you're 20 years old and you're not taking advantage of it and reaching out to people and just making connections, you know, I reached out to you. I didn't know what you would do. My world, the worst thing that you could do is say, no, okay. Exactly. I'm still alive and everything's okay, you know? Exactly. So, I mean, I think that fear, and I guess I would want us to kind of end on that note of overcoming that trepidation, that fear of being vulnerable, reaching out, taking a chance for connection and collaboration. I don't know. Let's end on that note of helping people with whatever insights you've got to overcome those things.
I think people, you know, I remember many years ago when I would be doing research for projects, and I'd maybe working for an ad agency or a PR firm, and we're trying to, you know, just kind of find, get insights on anything, you know, and I would call people I didn't know at all, just say, here's why I'm calling. I'd love to know kind of what you think about this. And it was in their field of expertise. For the most part, nobody else is asking them up, you know, what they think.
Right.
They were happy to, you know, offer their thoughts and opinions and share their expertise and espouse, you know, kind of how they saw things. And it was incredibly valuable, and it was good for them. I think the more they actually said out loud, you know, what those beliefs were, it kind of reaffirmed, you know, some things even for that person. But I think people by and large were super generous with their time. And I think the nature of people in many respects that when they have the time, they're happy to share, whether it's information, whether it's contacts, whether it's insights about anything that could be helpful. We've all been given a hand up by someone, you know, in our lives in some way, shape, or form. And I think, as so many of the guests in the podcast have talked about, we need to pay that forward. And I think we do. I like to think I do. I like to think the people around me do. I watch them do it all the time. You know, again, you know, as you know, I appreciate, you know, you reaching out, and by doing so, you know, it's been a really fun kind of year of the peer. We've met a lot of really amazing people. We've learned some incredible things. I mean, just think about the guests of the show. Many of these guests didn't know either of us from Adam, but they knew what we were trying to do and what we wanted to accomplish. And they said, hey, I'm on board, you know, I'll participate. And of course it didn't hurt that once you get some really good guests on and they say, oh, that's the caliber of guests you want. Sure. I want to be part of that.
Right.
And that's been really helpful. But I think if we all benefit from the input and hand and help and advice of others. And we have to get out of our own way and not be afraid to ask, because I think 9 times out of 10 or more, we're going to get a really great result. And you know, I just don't think there's anything like it.
The the book, the next book, due date is spring of 18. Is that correct?
Yes.
And so Leo's going to have a busy winter ahead, obviously. And you can find out more about Leo and his speaking and the workshops. You can go to his website at Leo Battari. That's LeoBottari.com. Everything is there, including the podcast that he does, Year of the Peer. And I want to strongly encourage people to subscribe to that podcast. And I am going to hawk a little bit for some new iTunes reviews. We need to get the reviews up. People say that it helps in discoverability at iTunes. I don't know that that's true. But Leo and I are vain enough that I'll ask you for them because we'd like to have them. And if you feel so disposed to leave a low star review, no, don't do that. We only want 5-star reviews. So I'll be picky and hawk that. It's so far, and here we are in August, and it's unbelievable that the year has gone by so quickly. But Claude Silver was episode 31. And by the time we get done this year, there will be about 50. So these are some conversations that are exactly on point with what I have morphed this podcast into being, which is now branded the Peer Advantage Podcast. And you will find, if you go over there and listen to these shows, you will find not just business and not just education. You will find, I mean, you've got a guy like Sekou, you know, a spoken artist, a spoken word artist, and it was a terrific show. They've all been, you know, I mean, you and I were talking the other day, and this sounds, for guys that produce this thing, they're really, I mean, there's not a dog in the bunch. I mean, they are all really good. They come from different viewpoints, which was the whole point, I think, of the podcast. But I'll let you end on that note, Leo, with any words you want to chime in about the podcast, your podcast.
Only that I think the strength of the podcast is that we just try to ask some good questions and get out of the way, because those guests, I think, are phenomenal in terms of just how they see the world, what they've done. I think when you even listen to a few of the podcasts, you're going to come up with some common themes. And of course, we'll get into these common themes in the book and in some real depth for next year. But, you know, none of these people have done it alone. And most of these people aren't doing what they're doing today because they thought when they were 5 years old that they wanted to be like an intellectual properties attorney or a chief human resources officer or a chief heart officer for that matter.
Right.
I mean, it's just really great to hear their very personal stories. Oftentimes what we see is someone who it's like, we didn't know them. And then all of a sudden they're famous. And we think, wow, someone was an overnight success in some way. And that, I think to a person, you hear every one of their stories. And there was a whole lot of hard work and a whole lot of some success, some failures, some things all along the way, but all of us kind of go through. And yet I think that they did a really good job of surrounding themselves with the right people and being persistent about what they wanted, you know, for themselves and for others in their lives. And, you know, it's just really great stuff. And it's been such a really honor and a privilege to get to spend time, the time we do with them on the podcast to learn from them. And it's just really been amazing. And of course, you know, on top of that, you know, the people that I've met at keynotes, or the people I've worked with on these workshops, or, you know, I did one for a group of entrepreneurs in Portugal, right, just a few weeks ago. And then, as you know, earlier this year, I actually conducted a workshop for prison wardens in Houston. So this matters to everybody, you know, this subject, it really does. And it's just been really fun to have people who are open to that and want to benefit from that, and they do, and they will.
Well, Leo's tagline of the Year of the Peer podcast says it all: who you surround yourself with matters. It does. Leo, I'm happy to be a small part of the people that surround you, and I'm I'm very happy that you're part of the people that surround me. So thanks for doing this. I appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
At Leo's new podcast, Year of the Peer, we have encountered some terrific guests from varied backgrounds and fields of accomplishment. And in each case, we found our guest to be gracious, to be giving. None of them have siloed themselves toward success. I mean, they each encountered mentors, guides along the way. Your success and mine and everybody else's is going to largely depend on the people that we allow into our lives. And some of those entrances will happen organically, some by way of just mere serendipity. But to think that our lives are left to mere random chance is delusional at worst, naive at best. Leo's podcast tagline is "Who you surround yourself with matters." The noun is you. The verb is surround. It's purposeful. It's intentional. We live in one of the greatest eras ever. We can quickly and easily find and connect with people who we think may be able to help us and people we may be able to help. It's our fault if we don't seize those opportunities. I'll go you one better. It's our fault if we don't create those opportunities because they're all around us. As Leo and I talked, you likely got a sense of how our humanity is at the crux of the peer advantage. And that's because it's true. Leo is no more defined solely as the co-author of a book, The Power of Peers, as he is only defined as the host of a podcast, Year of the Peer. He's a husband, he's a father, he's now a grandfather. And those are just three roles that he and I share. I, too, am a husband, I'm a father, I'm a grandfather. We're both baby boomers. And yet Leo and I are as different in many ways because he was born in one part of the country, me in another. He has lived in parts of the country where I have never lived. And our career paths, they're nothing alike. But in spite of whatever differences may separate us, we choose to surround ourselves with people that include each other because there's mutual benefits, as we have discovered, our own peer advantage. It was very intentional, very purposeful, the connection. Leo didn't know me at all, except for his name on the front of a book cover. I didn't know him at all. And it may seem to you to be, man, this bold, courageous step, but to me, it was no more threatening, and I didn't have any reservation. I had zero reservation in reaching out to Leo to help him. I only share that to inspire you to not wait. Don't delay in reaching out to people that you think may be able to join your pursuits, and people who have a pursuit that you may find worth joining, like I did with Leo. It wasn't about me. It was about the pursuit of finding out more and being part of this movement, the peer advantage. Leo popped onto my radar as I saw him appear after I got the book and I read the book, and I began to see Leo, not much, but I began to see him appear once or twice on a few shows where the interviews were available online. And these were, as I recall going back, these were mostly some radio shows. There might have been a TV show here or there. But it's not like he was all over the place appearing on all kinds of podcasts. I just saw him appear once or twice. And I looked and I could not find any platform where Leo was the host. He was always the guest. And he wasn't a guest a lot, at least in an online presence. And I saw an opportunity. I saw an opportunity that he may or may not have ever seen. I've been podcasting and participating in new media for many, many years, and I had something to offer him, something that wasn't beyond his capabilities to learn. He's a smart guy. He could have figured it out, but it was something that I knew I could do, and he wouldn't have to learn it. Something that I could just do for him. He just needed to get to know me so that we could develop some mutual trust. There are the first two elements of peer advantage contained in the book. Number one, select the right people. I selected Leo. He selected me in return when he said yes. And number two, create a safe environment. Leo had to develop trust in me. I had to develop some trust in him. We did, and you can see the results for yourself over at Year of the Peer podcast. You can go to leobotari.com, by the way, to get to there. L-E-O-B-O-T-T-A-R-Y. Again, go to the episode show notes for this episode, episode 5014. It's all right there. Trust between Leo and I, it came more easily because I began my conversation with him by telling him up front what I expected from this relationship. I guess better yet, I told him what I didn't expect. I didn't expect any money, didn't expect any glory, didn't expect any fame. Those weren't my goals. My goal, I told him, was guilt by association, and I'm sure I used that phrase. And my desire to be closer to this movement because I so firmly believed in it and still do. The peer advantage is that important to me. So important, I told Leo, that I want to make it my life's work for whatever time I have left on the planet. It's my encore career. The stuff I want to do now that I have over 35 years of business building experience behind me. Leo and I hold each other accountable in this relationship, from finding guests for the podcast to communicating with guests and follow up and all the way up to doing the voiceover work and editing the videos and then posting them in all the right places, including his website. I have my part to play in serving Leo and the cause. He shoulders his responsibilities to serve our listeners and viewers by trying to bring out the most valuable conversations he can with each guest. And we will debrief our work and we'll help each other try to achieve better results next time because we always believe, well, no, dare I say, we always know we can do better. Always. That dissatisfaction of today's work drives us to make his podcast better. Drives me to make this podcast better. Listeners, they'll judge it just as every business is judged completely by the market. The world doesn't care what Leo and I think. The world determines if we are providing value or not. It's up to us to do our best and to keep learning, keep improving, keep growing. It doesn't mean that the existing work isn't good. It doesn't mean that what we did yesterday or what we're doing today is not good and worthwhile and valuable. It is. It just means that we believe our best work is still in front of us. And there's two more elements of peer advantage that are talked about in the book. Valuable interaction and being accountable. Well, the only remaining element when you look at me and Leo, and if you look at us as kind of a micro peer group of just two people, is a smart guide, a leader who knows how to facilitate so that growth can happen. I would argue that Leo and I have that as well. He is in charge of Year of the Peer, but I am very much a co-pilot. He's mostly the smart guy in this, but sometimes I need to fill that role. And we both recognize and we both bow appropriately to the duties as the circumstances warrant because we know the objective. The objective is to do the best work of our lives. And we're already two fairly accomplished guys who have more history than future, but we both know and we both understand and feel this sense of responsibility to the message. The truth that we preach. Leo and I will both unhesitatingly tell you that we are still very much a work in progress in figuring things out, both individually and together. But speaking only for myself, I know this. Without Leo Battari being part of the circle of influencers in my life, I am not where I am today, or with the hope of being where I want to go. The Peer Advantage podcast and my intended work for forming two charter groups of just 7 small business owners from around the United States would not be possible without my having had the courage to reach out to Leo and in his boldness to say yes. And so I'll wrap things up with this series and this episode by urging you to be brave. Be bold. Courage often looks like humility, and it absolutely positively looks like vulnerability. It's a chance. And the only reason it's a chance is because you don't know the outcome. You know what you hope, and you know what you expect, but you don't have any guarantees except one. And here's the one guarantee that we all have. Do nothing. Don't be brave. Don't be bold. Don't be courageous. Don't be vulnerable. do nothing, and you'll be losing some of the potential greatest rewards ever. I could have taken a chance, and Leo could have said, nah. Okay. How am I worse off? But he didn't say, nah. He said, yes. And it changes everything. I mean, don't you feel like you owe it to yourself to give yourself the very best opportunity? I think you do. I wish for you and your business or your organization all the very best. I want to thank you for listening. I want to thank you for paying attention. And if you would like me to send you a link where you can download a zip file of every episode in this series, including today's show, just give me your email address in that opt-in box over at the website, growgreat.com. You can go to any post and you'll see a place. You'll see it all over the website. Just plug in your email address and I will send you that free gift. I'll have that available probably around mid-August 2017. That's it. Next time, we'll dive a little bit more into the advantages that can be provided, the benefits, if you please, the rewards of the peer advantage. And I'll bring that to you next week, the good Lord willing. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. Greetings and welcome inside the Yellow Studio.